The reading for tonight is Luke 12:13 through 21. Someone in the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the family inheritance with me." But he said to him, "Friend, who set me to be a judge or arbitrator over you?" And he said to them, "Take care. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of possessions." Then he told them a parable. The land of a rich man produced abundantly. And he thought to himself, "What should I do, for I have no place to store my crops?" Then he said, "I will do this. I will pull down my barns and build larger ones, and there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul, 'Soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, and be merry.' But God said to him, 'You fool, this very night your life is being demanded of you. And the things you have prepared, whose will they be?' So it is with those who store up treasures for themselves, but who are not rich toward God." The word of the Lord.
I gotta believe it wasn't always this dark. This desire came from a good place or a lighter place or a place of life. When the forces of manifest destiny ran up against the Pacific Ocean, they started looking around for something to do. For something they might have missed. They looked back over their shoulders and saw the Colorado Desert. The desert spreads out from the mountains east of San Diego to the Colorado River and from Palm Springs to the Mexican border. In 1896, a group of enterprising land developers saw all that cheap, unarable land and the mighty Colorado River flowing uselessly into the ocean and had an idea. They could divert the river and through a series of canals irrigate the desert, turn it into productive farmland, which, because of the climate, could produce four harvests a year, creating the need for workers and towns and houses, all kinds of infrastructure, and they could build it and sell it all. What could go wrong? They got to work. They formed the California Development Company to build the canals and divert the Colorado River, and then in 1900, as the work progressed, they formed the Imperial Land Company to sell the land to all the farmers and ranchers the irrigated desert would attract. They laid out five town sites, prepared thousands of acres of farming for farming and ranching, and they put up the for sale signs. Unfortunately, in their eagerness, they made some miscalculations. And when they went to divert the Colorado River, it broke through the side of the canal, main canal, and could not be stopped. It drained into the desert, where it formed the Salton Sea, to this day the largest body of water in the state of California. It drained into the desert for 2 years before they could get it back on track and eventually get it to do their bidding. The Salton Sea now is the greatest environmental disaster unfolding in U.S. history. As it dries up, all the soil filled with salt and 100 years of agricultural runoff is causing toxic dust storms. Hundreds of thousands of people's health are affected. But back then, Maybe they just wanted to make something. Back then, when they looked at that desert and they looked at that Colorado River and then back at the desert again, they just thought, you know, we could really make something happen here. The enormous body of water, you know, we could really make something happen. It was just right there. And it called out maybe to men of a certain quality. It cried out, develop me, civilize me, bring me culture, society, make something valuable, something worth something, something that can be sold and bought, measured, stored up, and saved. It was crying out, there's a lot of money to be made here. So one man's ecological disaster is another man's opportunity. When someone gives you lemons, right, what do you make? Well, if you were inexperienced, you'd make lemonade. If you were a man of a certain quality, you might open a lemonade stand. Or if you were smarter, even, if divine providence rested on your shoulders, you might instead print up some brochures, put together a classy film strip featuring pictures of an artist's rendering of what the lemonade stand might look like. And handsome girls and sexy men on the brochure drinking that lemonade and laughing, enjoying themselves. You might set up a tent on the site of a future lemonade stand, set up folding chairs, bring the suckers in out of the hot sun and put a cool glass of lemonade in their hand and offer them the opportunity to buy into that lemonade stand. Get in on the ground floor before it was built. Hell, you don't even have to be in that big of a hurry to actually build a lemonade stand. That way you can keep selling the opportunity. You see, an actual lemonade stand is a finite thing, a particular thing. If you offer the opportunity to buy into a particular existing lemonade stand, well, then the investors can actually look at it, walk through the lemonade stand, ask questions like, exactly how much lemonade do you sell here at this lemonade stand? And maybe they don't like the way it looks. Maybe the materials seem cheap, the building's shoddy, and maybe it turns out that there's not even much of a market for lemonade. These potential investors might start looking at the numbers and doing the math and realize what a lousy investment it would be. But now, if you're actually just selling opportunity to buy into a potential lemonade stand, well, you don't need real numbers, only projections. And projections are like faith and hope. You don't need an actual design, just a possible design of what it might look like. You don't even need to fill in the blanks. The investors will do that for you. In his imagination, he will only use the highest quality materials. In his imagination, no cost will be spared in the design and furnishings of this lemonade stand. And the lemonade sales will be off the charts. This investor will ask you why you only plan to build one lemonade stand. Why not two? Why not a lemonade stand franchise? Surely there was a time, perhaps an ancient time, when the impulse to build, to create societies, towns, accumulate land was not motivated purely by profit. I mean, people have been moving out, spreading out, moving into the frontier since Adam and Eve when looking for a new neighborhood. And they didn't move because they were convinced that the not in paradise land prices were really going to take off. No, like Adam and Eve, some people find that their circumstances have changed and they need to make a move. Or maybe their tribe gets bigger and the village gets crowded and folks want a little more room. Perhaps they want to distinguish themselves or make their mark to build something or have something of their own. Maybe a king is cramping their style and they're yearning to be free. Maybe they want a piece of the earth they can call their own, to measure their worth, to reify their existence, to manifest their destiny, if you will. And while the Puritans might have moved across the pond for the freedom to practice their faith, the movement to fill up the rest of the country seemed to have its freedom and faith with a large dose of economic development mixed in. It might not have started dark, that desire to move out, to civilize, to own. But it got there real quick. Before the Revolutionary War ended, Thomas Jefferson called America the Empire of Liberty, which he believed would survive and flourish by virtue and freedom of her citizens. And that virtue and freedom are most fully realized by buying property and working the land. Those who labor in the earth are the chosen people of God, he wrote in his notes on the States of Virginia in 1781. In order for this strength through property ownership to work, he could see that the U.S. of A. was going to need a lot more land. Jefferson thought it was an imperative to extend the liberty all the way across the continent, providing plenty of plots in which to root virtue and freedom. We shall form the American Union to the American Union a barrier against the dangerous extension of the British province of Canada, and add to the Empire of Liberty an extensive and fertile country, thereby converting dangerous enemies into valuable friends. Well, he never succeeded in adding Canada to the empire, and they didn't turn out to be as dangerous as they once looked. But we did manage to spread our liberty by buying France out of the continent and bringing our liberty to a pretty big chunk of Mexico by attacking them until they gave up. All the while, the empire was liberating native peoples from their lives and their land, and black slaves from their freedom. When Europeans first came to this continent and got to know the peoples who were already present here, and had it in their mind that God had given them the divine right to possess these lands, they saw that the ceremonies that these peoples practiced were a threat to that plan. They were a threat to that plan, and while the sun dance was seen as barbaric and the peyote rituals demonic, the ceremony that threatened these Europeans calling this continent their home now was that of the potlatch ceremony or the giveaway ceremony. This was the one that threatened them the most. It is this ceremony where native chiefs come together and show their strength by the amount of possessions they can give away. All that they have accumulated sometimes in the last year, they grant to their friends and to other villages. This ceremony is played out in personal naming ceremonies. It's added to many gatherings, where the host will gift to the guest things of real importance to them. And this was seen as the biggest threat to the developing and civilizing of the native peoples. If they do not have a sense of the accumulation of personal wealth, they can never be civilized. Like the Lord, our liberty moves in mysterious ways. Always it would seem with the hand of the divine beckoning us forward. President James Polk used the false claim that Mexico invaded American territory as the premise for declaring war. But the more driving justification might be articulated by the newspaper columnist John O'Sullivan, who urged on the president by claiming it was necessary to establish on earth the moral dignity and salvation of man. Working off Jefferson's original ideas and the persistent thread of American exceptionalism, O'Sullivan pulled it all together in a supposition he called manifest destiny. Manifest destiny, while never an actual doctrine with set out principles, was more of a slogan that covered multiple movements, justifying land grabs as an article of faith. The impulse for accumulation is so ingrained in our national religious value system. It's been there for so long. It's been there since the beginning. Our country, our culture, our definition of what it means to be civilized is founded on the principle of accumulation. We are an acquiring people. Virtue, righteousness, the good is inextricably linked to goods, stuff, land, wealth, piled up and passed along to your progeny, whose moral calling is to care for the accumulated wealth and add to it. More buildings, more land, more investments, more control, more wealth. Of course, those who proclaim this doctrine, who control the development of this culture, of this country, were those who already had the wealth piled up and passed along to them. The great majority of us do not inherit piles of wealth, but still the impulse to accumulate runs deep in our cultural unconscious. This country runs on the middle class and lower classes continually buying more stuff. The world economy depends on America buying more stuff. Most of us have this here, maybe. I don't want to assume too much. But most of us, I think, have an uncomfortable relationship with the accumulator within. We know that acquiring things, buying more plastic, toxic products from China is virtually immoral, makes the world less of a beautiful place, has real consequences on large groups of people who we don't know and have never seen. But still, stuff finds its way into our desires. Maybe we think somehow better stuff, not made in China, made all naturally, organic stuff, sustainable stuff, is somehow more virtuous. We collect socially conscious stuff. But it's the same desire that prods us forward. The impulse for accumulation is a part of who we are. It runs deep. But do not despair. Have the courage to hope, because there is deeper magic available. A profound transformation of a divine nature is possible for us and with us always. Because before Europeans landed on this continent, way back at the heart of creation, our people were given life as a gift. The story of faith that we gather around is the story of a gift. Not what we get. Whether we realize it or not, whether we see it or not, whether we want it or not, or we admit it, we exist by this gift. We are given this life. We are given each breath. And this is the true nature of who we are. And it's possible to see it and to recover it and to live it out, even surrounded by these other dark impulses. There is another way that we can uncover. There is another way that we can be. We come here each week to practice the mystery of this gift, to rehearse and retell the mystery of this gift, to remind ourselves and each other that it is possible to live another way.